All right, we're starting Parshas Vayishlach. Record. Yes. All right, we're starting Parshas Vayishlach. There's a lot of stuff to go over, guys. The end of last week's Parshas, the end of Vayitzeh, it says the following. It says, V'yakov holoch v'darko, Yaakov is going on his ways. V'yivgu bo malach Elohim, he met up with angels of God. How many angels? Take a guess. How many angels? Three. Anybody else? Anybody got anything?
Seven.
Ocho.
Seven. Two.
Ocho.
A million. Not bad, not bad.
Ocho.
900 million. 900 million malachim.
What's up, Dad?
All dressed up in the army, in the armor of an army person, of a regular warrior. They all dressed up in the armor of a regular warrior person. He met up with all 900 million of them. He realized as soon as he saw them, as soon as he saw them, Machane Elohim said, this is a camp of God that God has sent me. He said, I don't have to worry, these are warriors that are gonna fight on my side. But Machanoim. And he called the name of that place Machanoim. Machanoim stands for the following line: May Osam Chayalos. Natal Yaakov Malachim. From those chayos, from those warriors, Yaakov took Malachim and he gave them over to Esav. Not all of them did he send to Esav, although there is a medrash that he sent over Malachim to Esav and they started beating the living crud out of Esav's men until they had to bury them, and they made huge kvarim everywhere and they buried most of the men. But Esav also didn't just have 400 men. The medrashim tell us that he had 400 generals who were in charge of 400 men each. 400 times 400 is?
Several dozen.
That's 16 million. 160,000. Very good.
Well,
so that's some good math going, yeah. So the 60, that's altogether 160,000 men who are on Esav's side. On that, there was another 400 plus Esav himself. And on those, 900 million malachim were on Yaakov's side, ready to go there and to start beating them up. But Yaakov starts off, Yishlach Yaakov malachim in this parsha, and it seems that the malachim are coming from those malachim that we had in last week's parsha, the 900 million malachim over there. Those are the malachim that he sent over. It seems that that's who he sent over. However, every single morning we say in our tefillos right after Kriya Shema, Ezra Savosenim. Ezra Savosenim is the help of our fathers, should help us and they should be with us all day long. That those people, those malachim that helped our fathers, they should help us. Ezra is the gematria of 677 and refers to three major malachim that help us every single day, that helped out the Avos in their time. One is Michael we all know. Another one is Malkiel. Another one is Shanandiel. We have Michael, Malkiel, and Shanandiel. The gematria of Michal, Malkiel, and Shanandiel all together is 677, wow. Which is the same gematria as Ezra Savosenu. The Ezra Savosenu are the malachim of our fathers. Those are Michal, Malkiel, and Shanandiel. Says in Itzut Hashemshon, those malachim are malachim mamish. Rashi says, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, the very three words of this parsha, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim is the same gematria of 677. Rashi says, Malachim Mamish. Mamish is Michael, Malkiel, Shanandiel. Those are the Malachim Mamish, Michael, Malkiel, Shanandiel that he sent over, and that's Sapshapi, and Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, he sent over those three guys to go ahead.
Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim is 677.
All 677. That's crazy, right? Why are they called Malachim? Have you ever heard this before? Why are they called Malachim? Everybody says messengers, because Malach is a messenger, which is true. I'm sure it's true. The first time I found this, we say it every davening on Shabbos. On Shabbos, we say it during our davening. Where is it? Where is it? I would be shocked if anybody would get this. We say it on Shabbos day in Nishmas. Nishmas, the word Malachim. We say it every single day, because the whole purpose of Malachim, says Rabbeinu Ephraim, is to sing praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We say in Nishmas Kochai, Ilu Finu Mole Shira Kayam. If our mouths were full of Shira like the sea, Mole Kayam is Malachim. Is Malachim. That's what Rabbeinu Ephraim gets that from. Is that an unbelievable thing? Mole Kayam. That they're full of praises like the seas. That's where they get it from. I've never heard that before, but that's an unbelievable thing. But that's just... Stop. Alright, in love Angarti, he comes off and he says the following. I lived with Lavan, but I delayed up until now. So everybody knows the famous line, in love Angarti. Dionysus of Shabbat, and everybody knows what the Lev Tahor song. I was just listening to it on the way here. I'm like, oh, it's speaking about it. All right, but it says, in love and garti, Tariyag mitzvah Shabbat. The question is, wait a second. He kept 613 mitzvahs? What is the most obvious question you can think of? He married two sisters. Forget about all the other mitzvahs. Somehow he could have done all the other mitzvahs, korbanos and this and that, whatever. Somehow he could have done them. But he married two sisters. He's automatically down one. So the first thing that Esau should have said to him is, you're down one. It's not Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti, it's Bris. If anything, you have 612, but you don't have Taryag, you were automatically over on one, so you're off on one. And if you married four sisters, you were over on it three times already. There's no way. You can't tell me Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti. And he knew that. Arba Meos, the 400 men he had with him. Arba Meos is the gematria of 720, the exact same gematria as Achos Isha. He knew that Esav did. Esav realized that he had Achos Isha, and he knew that when he was coming along, and that's why he brought Arba Meos. He brought those Arba Meos to tell Yaakov, I know that you have Achos Isha. I realize that you have that sin. So how could he dare tell him 613 mitzvos? See, here, there are some answers. The Chassam Sofer answers this question. There's a Ksav Sofer that also answers the question, but I don't like the Ksav Sofer's answer, but who the heck am I? But there's a... thank you. So there's a... but there's a Baal Shem Tov. There's a Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov says a crazy answer. He says, whenever a person has a tremendous amount of hatzlacha working in a business with other people, with Goyim or whatever it is, he has a tremendous amount of hatzlacha making crazy amounts of money, millions, billions of dollars working for these Goyim, and then all of a sudden he stops himself and says, you know what, I don't want to work for them anymore. And he stops himself and says, I'm not working for them anymore. I'm not working for these guys anymore. I'm stopping because I realize they want me to do things that I really shouldn't do. They want me to work on Shabbos. They want me to not keep Pesach. They don't want me to do this or that, whatever it is. I don't want to do this anymore. Forget it. And he leaves the job, even though he realizes he's never going to be that successful anymore. And he realizes he's going to go down in his money and everything. That person, says the Baal Shem Tov, is as if he just kept all 613 mitzvos. So when Yaakov Avinu left Lavan, after making crazy amounts of money, he's got the oxen, he's got the donkeys, he's got the cattle, he's got the everything you can think of. He's got everything that he could possibly imagine, including slaves and shvachos and everything. When he left, it was like he kept all 613 mitzvot. So even though he was over on Achos Isha, even though technically he was over on Achos Isha, lefi the drush of the Baal Shem Tov, he's still okay. I kept Taryag mitzvot by leaving Lavan. So you know what the pshat is? I could care less about Olam Hazeh. I heard a great vort from Rabbi Benjamin Newman from Tells, the Mashgiach Tells, just a couple minutes ago at Beis Oshis. He said this over. It's just an unbelievable vor. The difference between Yaakov and Esav is they both had Olam Hazeh. When Esav saw him the first time, he looks at him and he's like, "Jeez, what happened to you? I thought you wanted Olam Haba. You've got four wives, 12 kids. You've got all the money you could ever want. What about your Olam Haba? I thought you didn't want Olam Hazeh. What happened to you?" So Yaakov said, "You think I have Olam Hazeh for Olam Hazeh? I have all these things because I need them for Olam Haba. I don't have Olam Hazeh because I want this world. I have Olam Hazeh because I want Olam Haba." Esav couldn't understand that. He had Olam Hazeh because he kept wanting to go higher and higher. Yishli Rav, I want to keep going higher and higher and higher. Yaakov said, Yishli Kol, I've got everything. I don't need anything more than I already have. We'll explain that a lot more a little bit later with Rabbi Akiva and everything. But the fact is, Yishli Kol, I have everything. I have Olam Hazeh because I know this is what I need for Olam Haba, which explains why he went back for that Pak Shemen. That stupid little thing of oil. You need a little thing of oil? Yaakov, you just give it up. It's a little thing of oil. Now, all the Midrashim say that Pach Shemen was supposed to be the crazy Pach Shemen that's going to be found later on by the Chashmonayim. That's the part of the Beis HaMikdash. They say it's also the Shemen HaMishcha that was used for the Bat HaMikdash. It was used for David HaMelech. It was used for the Kohen Gadol. It was used all over the place. That's a crazy amount of Shemen HaMishcha. I agree that that would be something that you would want to go back for. But Yaakov, you know, if you go with the Pashup shot that it was just a Pach Shemen, why would you go back for it? Because Yaakov knew every single thing he owned, there was a purpose for in this world. There was a reason why he had it. He understood this world as being a purpose to go toward Olam Haba. And if he was missing something, even a little Pach Shemen, he's going to be lost completely. Which explains the Satan. Satan runs up to him and starts fighting with him. Crazy Satan goes up to him. Why? He's going back because that Pach Shemen is something really important because Yaakov has everything in the world. He's doing everything for Olam Haba. Satan doesn't understand that. Satan looks at you. Whenever he sees you looking after something in Olam Hazeh, he immediately starts to accuse. And by Yaakov, when he saw him going back, it looked like he was going back for money. Said, forget it. Let's go fight him. And he went and he fought him, but he couldn't do anything. And it wasn't like a fight, as you know, like, you know, where you have like each one of them has like, when I think of this fight, I think of like American Gladiators when they go up on top of those things and they have like the big pills, you know, and like you hear like the sound in the background, da 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 da, and they're like fighting each other and they're like all the way in the morning and this something like does like a cool movie, like starts going to the left and he's like and gets him in the leg and Yaakov's like and like sitting there and he's like teetering off the thing, you know, it's not how it was. It's not a fight that we're thinking of, you know, just like putting up their dukes and like going around. They were like sitting there staring at each other. Like one of them, it's not even a cool fight. Like if you would go back in time and you would go back and you'd be like, oh, I want to see the fight. So you'd go back in time and you'd see like Yaakov just sitting there in the field and just being like, maybe he'd be like learning. probably chuckling, you know? And, like, all of a sudden, there's, like, a Moloch. You don't see the Moloch. You're not going to see the Moloch over there. Don't think you're that special. I'm, like, sitting there, you know? I'm, like, in the upper spheres, in the upper worlds, you have Yaakov fighting a Moloch, and it's some crazy thing of, like, I don't know, some Matrix thing of, like, some guy, like, running around the ceiling and, like, doing this and going all over the place. Maybe, you know? But, like, down here on Earth, all it was Yaakov, you know, learning like that. And then all of a sudden, he, like, as he's, like, oh, he, like, hit himself. That's what ended up happening. It wasn't, like, a crazy thing where, like, the Moloch was going over there. It's a totally different type of a fight that you can't imagine. You can't imagine, yeah. They brought up dust to the Kisei HaKavod. Have you ever done that? It's impossible. Like that's not like, you can take a thing of dust and throw it as far as you can. It ain't going to hit up there. It's not going to go. It's going to go far, but it's not going to go all the way up to the Kisei HaKavod. The Kisei HaKavod is a total of, I just did the Gemara Chagiga, so nobody goes so crazy on me, but it's a total of about 45,000 years away from you. We're not talking light years. We're talking years in which you would have to walk up there and eventually get to it. If you can throw that far, you'd be playing left field for the White Sox, and you wouldn't be having a problem. I mean, this that guy. Yeah, I mean, I'm somewhat of a White Sox fan, but you know, the Red Sox would pay $57 million just to talk to him. But anyway, you'd have, like, you know, obviously that this is not shot. It's not shot. All right, now I'm going to tell you guys. Yaakov makes a discussion with Esav over here. This discussion on the outside. Let's look at it on the outside. I've been with Lavan. I've been delaying up until now. Oh, that was necessary. You've been delaying up until now. I didn't know that. What was he doing up until now? I've been walking up until now. I've been delaying up until now. That seems to be very obvious. I've got oxen and donkeys. Son ve'eved, the shifcha. Sheep, slaves, maidservants. I'm going to send them in front of you, my master, to find favor in your eyes. He didn't send any avadim to him. When did he send slaves? Anybody see any slaves later on?
No.
He sent them later on, sheep, goats, donkeys, oxen, and then he sent camels. He didn't send any slaves, and he didn't even mention the goats and the camels over here. What's going on over here?
He sent Dina in a box.
UPS?
Dina wasn't in a box. Yeah, that would be a little bit weird, but, like, no, he hid Dina from her. But he did send this. What's going on in this conversation? So don't think that there's just, like, oh, nothing going on. They're just chilling out together, and, like, Yaakov sending a message, hey, guess what I got, oxen? No, that's not it. There's crazy stuff going on.
I drive a 22 camel.
He said, Ba'ikarad Ato, there are three major gullies that Bnei Yisrael went through in which they left Eretz Yisrael and they were somewhere else. Yavan, although it was a gullus, was not outside of Eretz Yisrael. They were in Eretz Yisrael. Paras and Madai was all part of Bavel. How long, the first gullus that Bnei Yisrael had was where? Mitzrayim. How long? 400 years officially. It was officially supposed to be 400 years altogether, right? Then they went to, after that, they ended up having Bavel. Bavel was for how many years?
70
years. And then they had Gullus Edom. And Gullus Edom was supposed to be over in what millennium, we'll call it? And sometime within the 6,000th year, which is the Hay. We're in Hay, Tashin Samach Zion. But we're somewhere around there. We don't know exactly when it's going to be, but it's in the Hay. Va'echar ad ato, says Yaakov, I'm delaying until Ayin, Tuf, Hay. Until the Ayin of Bavel is over, the Tuf of Mitzrayim is over, and the Hay Alpayim. That's when I'm going to come back and I'm going to come to destroy you. What do I have? What do I have on my side? Va'yili Shor, the Chamor. Shor stands for who? Who's the Shor?
Yosef
Atzadik, right? Yosef is Mashiach ben Yosef. I've got Mashiach ben Yosef, which is going to come and destroy you. And then after that, if you think you're going to be able to survive Mashiach ben Yosef, because Mashiach ben Yosef is supposed to die, I've also got a chamor, the ani, that's Rochev al chamor, the poor man that rides on a donkey through the streets until he comes. Who is? Mashiach ben David. That eventually Mashiach ben David is going to come along. I have the schus of the tzon, of the sheep that I have now, of schus of Klai Yisrael, all Klai Yisrael doing what they're supposed to do by being avadim and shvachos to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and listening to everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. You know why? Esav was an shor himself. It's mentioned throughout. There's a shor and chamor of Tuma. There's a shor and a chamor of Tahara. The shor and chamor of Tuma, there's a shor, there's an axe that gores. For example, in Bava Kama, I'm doing Bava Kama right now. I give a whole shor on this. The axe that gores, you think we're just talking about an axe? I always give an example of a pit bull, because you can't really understand an axe. Nobody's walking around like, hey, look at that axe. It never happens. And if it does, like Rabbi Cohn said that one time he heard his uncle got gored. All right, that's one of a trillion. It's like, it's never going to happen. You know, you don't go with oxen. So why does the Gemara deal with an axe if an axe couldn't have been that common back then? I mean, an axe goring people couldn't have been the most common thing in the world. Why not go with a dog? A dog biting a person. Why not say that? The reason why is because Shor stands for Esav. Esav is the gorer. Chamor is known as the Amadom el Chamor. Who did Avram Avinu say that to? The people that are compared to donkeys, Yishmal. Yishmal and Esav are the Shor and the Chamor of Tuma. The Shor and the Chamor of Tuma. And they got together, and they were able to make a total, by Esav marrying into Yishmael's family, were able to make a combination of Shor and Chamor, a crazy amount of Tuma, who was able to bring about crazy things in the world. As we said, the 580, the B'nai Reshef, the demons that they brought about 2 weeks ago, those crazy demons that Yaakov had to add on the shame of El 2 to make it into 611, to make it into Torah, to add all those things together. Go back to Parshas Toldos, you see what I'm talking about. Either way, but they made these crazy things, and that's why Yaakov knew, I know you have Shor and Chamor, and I realize that eventually B'nai Yisrael is going to fall for it a little bit. The Egel Azov consisted of half of it was a Shor and half of it was a Chamor. It was half and half. The front half was an ox and the back half was a donkey, because it was Yishmael and Esav getting together making B'nai Yisrael sin. That's what the Erev Rav was all about, mixing together the different things. That's a great question, but that's not for now. That's because of Apish, but we won't talk about that for now. By the way, but it was a Shor and a Chamor. Yaakov said, you know what I can do? I can combat that with Torah. The only way I'm going to be able to do it is by learning Torah. And I have two different ways of learning up Torah. One of them is a Shor. A Shor stands for a guy who gores. You ever seen a guy, I don't know what Skokie's like in the morning over here by a base medrash, but I have a kosher mishpakola. There are some guys, I mean, it's happened only twice or three times in the yeshiva program in the morning by me, but where somebody gets so nuts about a certain pshat, he says a pshat, and he's so sure that he's right, that he gets out there and he's like, no, I'm telling you I'm right! He starts screaming and like goes on and gives one proof after the other, no matter what you tell him, he's never going to listen. Happens, right? Rabbi Friedman. Rabbi Friedman is a very, very good example of a Shor. A Shor that sits there and gores anybody who comes near him. You want to argue with me? I mean, with Robert Freeman, there's always a little Coke in the hand, so he can't go so crazy because he's still drinking, you know. But either way, but like, he's sitting there and he's goring, and he sits there and he goes ahead through that eon. He's able to break things down. He's able to break down the power of Esav. He's able to break down the power of Esav. But there's another type of a learner, and it's Chamor. Who's known as the Chamor of the Shvatim? He's the donkey. Who's the donkey? Yisachar. Yisachar is the Chamor Garen. He's got a load on his back. Yisachar is the guy that knows all the Gemara's Baal Peh. He does Bekiyas. Crazy Bekiyas guy. He's like that crazy guy. You're like, hey, where's that Gemara about? And he's like, Menachos, Lama Dala, Number Base, check out Rashi. You know, that type of a guy. That's the Chamor. I've got that also. I've got the Shor and the Chamor. No matter how you look at it, I've got two different types of learning, says Yaakov Avinu. I've got the two different types over here. That's followed by the Tzon that all the multitudes of people are going to do, and by doing that, I'll be able to control everything. I'll be able to control everything that you and Yishmael do. I'll be able to keep you guys in check. Your Shor and your Chamor of Tuma will be kept in check by my Shor and my Chamor of Kedusha. I'll be able to knock you guys down in everything. And thus,
thinkers, doctors, and lawyers.
Very good, very good. But either way, and thus, what does he send to him?
Lord.
Listen to this shot, Rabbi Kaplan, or David Kaplan of Or Sameach, said this shot to me in my first year. It's an awesome shot. Thus, he sends to him the following. First, he sends to him goats, then he sends sheep, then he sends afterward, he sends camels, then cows, and then donkeys. Says Rabbi Kaplan, kosher, kosher, not kosher, kosher, not kosher. Why does he send it that way? Why not do all three koshers all at once, and then the not koshers afterward, or not koshers first, and then the kosher ones? What's the point? Why do it that way? Says Rabbi Kaplan, it's all remnants. He's showing Esav, you know what life is going to be like? First, B'nai Yisrael are going to be kosher. First, they're going to have the Mishkan. They're going to get the Torah at Har Sinai, and they're going to have a Mishkan. That's going to be all good. But that's going to lead them to a higher level of kosher. Not just goats, but then the sheep. A higher level of sheep. A higher level of kosher. That kosher is going to be the first base of Mikdash. But then, the first base of Mikdash is going to be destroyed. It's going to be destroyed. And then afterward, there's going to be a second base of Mikdash. And it's going to be a higher level to cows. But afterward, that one is also going to be destroyed. And he ends off with that. Kosher, kosher is Mishkan, first base of Mikdash, first base of Mikdash destroyed. Second base of Mikdash destroyed. And he ends with that.
The second was worse.
What?
Spiritually. It was bigger.
Spiritually. But as you go on, more things were involved in the second base matrix than the first. You are right, spiritually, that it was worse than the other. However, as you go on, you're right. There wasn't an Aaron, there wasn't no Rimatumin, there was no Nevuah, there was no anything. You're right. But there's greater things in physicality, not only in physicality and the physical building itself, but also in the amount of people that were able to worship in that place. Crazy things happened during the second base matrix. More. Let's not talk about it for now. You're right. More people served, more people were involved. There's just more to it than just that. Okay, kosher, not kosher. Oh, it goes goats, then sheep, then camels, and then afterward comes the cows, and then afterward donkeys. But the camels and the donkeys we're not going to talk about right now. Now, over here, the servants were never sent. They knew that. The servants was just to show Esav what they were like, what Ben Esav were going to be like. We're going to be Avadim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to be Shvachus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we're going to do. Here he sends them over to him, and he says a lesson. He tells them a lesson. The first base of Mikdash is Avram Avinu. Second base of Mikdash is Yitzchak. Third base of Mikdash is Yaakov Avinu. The first base of Mikdash was destroyed. Why was it destroyed? Because of what? Because the Torah is what the Gemara says, but what? Because they did three big things. Shvichus Damim, Gili Arayis, and Avodah Zarah. They were over on those three things. Yishmael was Mitzachik. When he was Mitzachik, Rashi says he was over on Gili Arayis, Shvichus Damim, and Avodah Zarah. That's Avram is the first base of Mikdash, destroyed because Yishmael got destroyed. Second base of Mikdash is what? Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the second base of Mikdash. Got destroyed because of what? Sinas Chinam, as well as Gilui Rashi Chazam Avodah Zarah, and that's Esav. Esav was the cause of that. The last thing that was sent was Esav. The destruction of the second base of Mikdash is Esav. And after that, there's nothing. He sees a whole long gullus full of Esav that goes further and further and further. He sees all that, and he's happy. Esav gets all happy, and he's like, oh, I'm going to last forever. Nothing's going to stop me. Yaakov won't send anything afterward. To which Yaakov says in Pasuk Yates, and tell him, Vine gamhu acharenu. Don't worry, Yaakov is all the way in the back. Yaakov, the third base of Mikdash, will eventually come. He's going to come. You don't see him right now, but he's there, and he will eventually come up. Pasuk Yates, he comes up. Vine gamhu acharenu. The final thing to come up was going to be Yaakov. He's going to come along. All right, guys, we're going to skip. I'm going to skip something right now. Oh, you know what? Let's go into Yesh Li Kol. I happen to love this stuff. Yesh Li Kol. I have everything. That's the famous thing that they say, that Yaakov says, I have everything. What is this everything? I know that Rabbi Shimon spoke a little bit about this over Shavuos. I'm going to try to say it in a different way because I know what he said. And I'm going to try to say it in a different way because it doesn't. I'm starting it off in a different way. Yaakov, when Yaakov heard that Dina was raped, what did he do?
Nothing.
Said absolutely nothing. Sat there. Let's just pretend, you know, like Shechem and Hamor come along and is just like, I'm really sorry, my son raped your daughter. Sits down, learning. Shechem and Hamor must have felt really uncomfortable. Like, should we go? What should we do now? I'm not so sure. Do you think he heard us? Like one of those things, you know? The Shvatim come in, the Shvatim walk inside, and they're like, what's going on here? Shechem, Hamor, what are you guys doing here? Donkey head. Like, what's going on with you guys? So they're like, oh, you know, bad news. I kind of raped your sister. They go crazy. What? What are you gonna do? I can't believe it. They start going crazy. Start yelling at him. They start yelling at all that. Yaakov's sitting there the whole time, just chilled out, you know, just maybe like checking his nails. Is everything good? All of a sudden, at the end, comes along Shimon and Levi. Kills off the entire city. Shimon and Levi. Good reason. I mean, come on. They caused all this to happen. They could say because of Din or because of maybe Gezel or whatever reason they had, but they killed off the entire city. All of a sudden, Yaakov goes nuts. Yaakov goes up there. What's wrong with you guys? How could you have killed them? What's wrong with you? Yaakov and then Shimon and Levi get up there. What? You want to make her like a Zona? Parsha ends. That's like act one. It's just like... like all of a sudden, what in the world just happened? Yaakov, your daughter's raped. I'm all good with that. Like, they just killed off an entire city of 654 people. Or 24,000, you should say. But if anything, you'd think that they would have looked at them and been like, wow, that's not by yourselves? You'd think, like, that would be the line, you know? So, like, no, that's not even what happened. All that happened is Yaakov just looks at them and just like, I can't believe you guys just did that. That was stupid. And the rape, what in the world is going on here? And the murder was a murder that was beheter. The rape was entirely beheter by a guy. What in the world is going on here? By din, they were, because they should have judged him. That's why I said, because of din, or gezel, or whatever you want to call it, there was still reason, hashkim largecha, bo lahor go hashkim largecha. There's all different things and reasons why. But regardless, what happened over here? Yaakov was a guy who said, yesh li kol, I have everything. What does he mean by that? Yaakov means, not only does he have everything in this world, he understands why everything happens. He's Sadik Varalo. Bad things happen to good people. And he understands why they have to happen to good people. Very few people are on the level of Yaakov to be shalom, to be perfect, and to understand why everything happens. Tzadik Varalo is Tzadi, Vav, and Resh, as in Tzur, the rock. What do you say when somebody passes away? Hatzur Tamim Paalo. The rock. Perfect is his things. Perfect is everything that he does. He's a rock. He is solid. Tzadik Varalo. Tzadik Varalo. He is a rock. He is solid. You can't go against him. There's no way to break a rock. There's nothing you can do to a rock. He is a rock. Everything he does is perfect and with reason, and there's nothing that you can go against that. That is the 50th level of Torah. There are 50 levels of understanding within the Torah. The 50th level is understanding why bad things happen to good people. Don't think it's pashut. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to come to that level. Moshe Rabbeinu was Mechaser Ma'at. He was only on the 49th level of Kedusha. He's able to get to that 49th level, but he never, ever understood why bad things happen to the Jews. Every time you see Moshe Rabbeinu complaining to Hashem, it's always, how could you do something bad to the people? How could you do something bad to these Jews? What did they do to deserve this? Tzadik Varalo was the one issue that Moshe Rabbeinu, on his level, could not understand. Yaakov Avinu understood it. When this happened, and Dina got raped, and by the way, that's actually Kol. Kol is Chaf Lamed, is a Gematria 50. He's on the 50th level. Says Yaakov Avinu, on that level. I understand that level. I'm perfectly on that level. I have that Havana. As soon as he finds out about Dina being raped, he understood there's crazy things going on behind the scenes. He knows that Dina was supposed to be raped. He knows that Dina was supposed to get together with Shechem. For whatever reason there was out there, there was a reason. Once Shechem raped Dina, it says a funny thing. Chashka nafsho b'dina bas Yaakov. Not his body. His soul desired Dina bas Yaakov. We know whose daughter she is. We know she's Yaakov's daughter. Why do you have to say that? Nafsho? Shechem all of a sudden felt a pull to become a Jew. Did he mean it at first? No. But there was a bit of L'shem Shemayim in him. And Yaakov saw that and realized this is how it's supposed to be. Shechem is supposed to keep marrying Dina, is supposed to stay with Dina, and there's going to be a tremendous amount of Kedusha that's going to come from this relationship. A crazy amount of Kedusha that comes from this relationship. Who is the kid? Who is the kid from this? Osnas. Who did Osnas marry?
Yosef.
You're not a pasha person if you marry Yosef. You're not a stam person to marry Yosef. Yosef is the gedol, the sod tzaddik olam. There's not a stam person who can just do that. In order to marry Yosef, you have to be a tremendous person. And Dina and Shechem had that. And that was from an illicit relationship where he raped her. Can you imagine what would have happened if Shechem would have become a perfectly fine Jew and they would have gotten together and had a kid? Can you imagine what kind of a kid, what kind of kedusha could have come from that? Yaakov knew that. And he realized what could have happened. And he said, I want it to be that way. Shimon and Levi, however, felt that it was done wrongly. Nothing good is going to come from this relationship. They took Osnas and they threw her away, thinking she was going to be Tame. Threw her away, and thus she married Yosef. But Shimon said to himself, no, I'm going to take Dina. I'm going to marry Dina myself and bring back the Kedusha through me myself. He went ahead and tried to do it himself. And he killed off the entire city with whatever excuses that he had, the reasons that they had for doing that. They went ahead and killed off the entire city, and Shimon married Dina, and later on they had a son. They had a son. His name was Shaul ben Akananis. That guy, Shaul ben Akananis, is also known as Zimri. Zimri got together with Cusby later on. Everybody remember Zimri and Cusby? Zimri and Cusby run up to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Zimri runs with Cusby and says, Zimri was about 250 years old. Zimri, with 250 years old, grabs Cusby, the Nasi of Bnei Shimon, grabs Cusby, says to Moshe Rabbeinu, is this woman mutter or usser? What is he asking? Well, what do you think Moshe Rabbeinu is going to tell you? She's mutter. That would have been a shocker. Like, oh, no, okay, I'm done. Of course he's going to say it's usser. What kind of a question? I realize it's a lead-up, a lead-in to his next question. But what's Zimri doing? You know what Zimri's doing? Zimri knows he's got a tikkun to make for Dina. Cusby is a tikkun of Dina. And so is Zimri, a tikkun of Shechem. Zimri realizes that his neshama is Shechem's neshama, and that Dina is within Cusby. And there's a tremendous amount that him and Cusby can do if they get together in the right way. So he went up to Moshe Rabbeinu and he said, can I do this? And Moshe Rabbeinu realized there's a Kedusha there and said, I can't stop you. I realize there's a Kedusha there. Only Pinchas was able to realize something was missing in that relationship. There's something missing. Pinchas was closer to the level of Tzur than Moshe Rabbeinu was. Pinchas saw it and said, there's something wrong here. And killed them, took care of them, realized there's something wrong. What was Zimri's real name? Not Shaul ben Kananis. What was his real name? Mentioned in the Parsha. Shlumiel. than Tsuri Shadoi. Tsur. What was Cusby's last name? Cusby Bas?
Tsur.
Tsur is mentioned in both of them. There was Sadek Viralo. They both understood what their purpose was in this world, to bring about crazy things. But they messed it up, and it had to be Metakin once again.
What should have they
How done? Many people were killed in Shechem? 24,000. How many people were killed by Bnei Shimon? 24,000. Let's bring this all the way down to another 24,000 people that were killed by Rabbi Akiva. Akiva is the exact same name as Yaakov. You add on an Aleph. It's the exact same name. Rabbi Akiva got to that level. Everybody knows that Gemara. Arba nechnesu bapardes. Four people got up to the level that is beyond human comprehension. Ben Azai died. Ben Zoma went crazy. Acher went off the derech. Rabbi Akiva was able to get up there and stop and say, okay, I understand this. This is all I need. He was able to get up there and say, Yeshli Kol, I've got everything. He was able to do that. Guys, remember all the way back when? What did Yaakov do the first time they met, he met Rachel? What's the first thing he did?
He moved
the rock and took the rock off the well. That rock is the tsur that was on top of the well full of Torah, the water that's in the Torah. He took that tsur and he was able to understand tsur as soon as he saw Rachel. What did he see? The nevuah that he saw was that what? Rachel wasn't going to be buried with him. That's unfair. This is my pure wife. Why in the world am I not going to be buried with her? To that, he realized, he took the tzur, threw it off, and he said, unbelievable, I understand why all this has to happen. And he understood, he saw why everything had to happen in that way. He saw that tzur, he saw that rock, and saw everything was supposed to be perfect. Later on, Rabbi Akiva comes along and does the exact same thing. What made him start learning? What did he see?
His wife
made him sent him out, and he saw a rock, and the water was piercing a hole in the middle of the rock. Again, a tzur with Rabbi Akiva, the same osios as Yaakov, coming along and doing the exact same thing, seeing that rock and realizing there's reasons why bad things happen to good people. There's reasons why this sort of thing happens. I have to work on that. And he kept working and working and working. He was a Talmud of Nachum Ish Gamzu for over 18 years. Nachum Ish Gamzu Latova. And he improved it to the point where he said, everything that's done is for the best. Called the Avid Rahmana Latav Avid. Anything that God does is entirely for the best. He improved the Gamzu Latova to an entirely different level. Rabbi Akiva came along to that level in which he came, and because he wasn't exactly on that level yet at that time of his life, he lost another 24,000 Talmidim. For the 24,000 people of Shechem, with the 24,000 people of Shimon, all the 24,000 Talmidim died once again because Rabbi Akiva wasn't on the level yet. And at the very end of his life, that's finally when he's able to get it. When Aetius Turnus Rufus, Turnus Rufus was the general in charge of all of Eretz Yisrael at the time, he was a Roman general, comes Turnus Rufus and says to his wife, I can't get Rabbi Akiva to do anything. Says Aetius Turnus Rufus, I am tremendously beautiful, I'll get Rabbi Akiva. And she meets up with him in an alley that is totally cornered off. She's on one end, he's coming the other way. He has no way of getting out of the alley, there are people surrounding the other way, and Aetius Turnus Rufus is coming up to him, trying to seduce him to make sure that he would do a sin. Rabbi Akiva does the strangest thing in the world. He laughs, cries, and spits. That's not what you do when you see a beautiful girl. Well, now it is. But he laughs, cries, and spits. Why? He spat because he realized, such beauty fooled me, my past two Gilgulim. The beauty of Dina was able to get me when I was Shechem, and the beauty of Cusby was able to get me when I was Zimri, and I didn't do it in the right way. How could I have messed up that badly? He cried because he realized how many people had to die. 24,000 people, three times over, had to die before he could come about to this tikkun, where he finally figured out why everything happens to people, why everything happens, and he figured it out right then and there. And he laughed because he saw that he was finally Metakin Dina, that he was going to marry Aetius Turnus Rufus at one point, and he was going to end up marrying her. And by marrying her, Rachel was already dead. His wife Rachel had already died. And he realized afterward that this is the purpose of why I was put into this world, in order to be Metakin Dina and to bring about everything. I am Shechem. I am Shechem, and that's why he used to say, when I was in Am Haaretz, I wanted to bite people like a donkey. His Talmidim said, Rebbe, say like a dog. He's like, no, donkeys break bones. That's a very, very great answer. But what's the shot? He's Shechem ben Hamor. He is the son of Hamor. He is the donkey, so to speak. Rabbi Akiva realized that, knows what he's supposed to do, and thus Rabbi Akiva comes along. Rabbi Akiva comes along and fixes up everything that there is to do. And he looks at Aetius Turnus Rufus, and Aetius Turnus Rufus is shocked. He says, what's going on there? And Rabbi Akiva says, I'm going to marry you. Now that's a shocker. And Aetius Turnus Rufus says, what? And he says, there's a marriage that has to be done between the two of us. You're going to become a Gioris, and you're supposed to become Jewish. It won't happen for a while, but you're going to become Jewish. That shocked her to the point where she mamish did tshuva gemura be'ahava. right there, and he didn't end up marrying her until later on, but he did end up marrying Aetius Turnus Rufus, and he fixed up everything that was within Dina, and everything that was to be fixed up, he fixed up. Just one more thing. Akiva was Ben.
Orcus.
Kiva Ben.
Husband Tur.
Yosef. The only other person who was able to come that close to marrying such a relationship between Dina and Shechem, Osnas, was who? Yosef. Akiva was also a little bit of a nitzutz from Yosef HaTzadik, to be able to take the tzidkus of Yosef HaTzadik and to bring it in for himself, to bring him into a person that was able to control himself and control his taivas and not have any problems when he met a person that was that beautiful. By adding on that Yosef into his into him, he was able to add himself on to a perfect thing. And to end off, Maisa Avo Simin Labanim, guys. Tell me when this happened before. A besula was taken by guys. They wanted to live with Bnei Yisrael. They wanted to be friends with them. They pretended to like them, but they had hidden plans to take away all their stuff in the end. There was a ke'ilu. They were having problems even while living in Eretz Yisrael. And in the end, a few killed many people. What have you heard that story before? Hanukkah. Maisa Avos Simin Labanim. Everything that happens within the Avos is going to happen eventually. This entire thing with Yaakov and the brothers and everything is exactly what happens on Hanukkah. It was originally Besulos were taken because the Hegemon made them be bald, the Besulos, before they got married in the times of Greece. Here Dina was taken. They wanted to live with Bnei Yisrael. They didn't want to kill Bnei Yisrael. They wanted to live with them. The Greeks said, guys, let's be friends. We'll be friends together. We'll chill out together. Number three, pretended to like them, but they had hidden plans. Shechem and Hamor went back to their people. Don't worry, we're going to marry off their people, we're going to take all their money, and then everything's going to be good. The Greeks also said, don't worry, we're just going to get a hold of them, and then afterward they'll become like us, and then we'll all be Greeks together, and everything will be good. There was a Gullus in Eretz Yisrael by Gullus Yavan. Over here, they were in Eretz Yisrael, and yet there was still a Gullus. And the final thing was, a few people killed many. Shimon and Levi were able to kill a whole city of maybe even 24,000 people. Five people were able to kill an entire army of Greeks.
They all had dresses.
That's true. You don't think the Greeks were weakened as well?
Why? They had an army.
The Malachim were there. Josephus says, he quotes down Josephus, it's not, you know, Josephus Flavius quotes down in his history book, when the Greeks went out to war, they saw an angel dressed in all white riding a golden horse in the air above them that was slaughtering the people in front of them.
Say something
that would make you weak. I would assume. But that's in Orachaim. Orachaim quotes down that Josephus. You can find it. It's mentioned by the Josephus by all over the place. Just know, guys,
I don't like
everything is for a purpose. That's just one tiny little part of Dina and Shechem. And trust me, as I said last week, there's more to this whole story. Much, much more to this whole story of Dina and Shechem. But that's not for now. There's much more to it that we'll get to later. And Melchemes Bnei Yaakov. The War of Bnei Yaakov. Bleen Nedder will go to it next week. The craziest story you'll ever hear. My Rebbe once told me it reads like a comic book. It does. We'll tell it over next week.
Oh, I know.
We'll try to tell over this Melchemes Bnei Yaakov. We'll get to it next week. All right, guys.